Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real people discuss events, technology and work life in the networking industry. During the week, we gather articles and ideas, go and find people to talk about them, and then get them around a workbench to diagnose the problems of the network world with humour, wit and just possibly some technical talent. Before we get started on today's show, I just wanted to let you know we'd love to hear your feedback about the show. So send us some email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net and leave comments on today's show. We do get back to you. Alternatively, you can follow us on Twitter as @packetpushers or on Facebook at packetpushers, facebook.com/packetpushers, I think it is. Of course, we rely on your ideas and your suggestions to put the show together, so please don't hesitate to get in contact with us. They're quite valuable to us. And let's introduce the people on the show today. As always, Ethan's returning to co-host this week. How are you, Ethan?
Hey, pretty good. Busy out of my mind. All of a sudden, things have picked up where we're trying to get a bunch of VMs spun up and working with those guys to help the virtualized environment take off. And we got some blade centers coming in. We got new wireless infrastructure coming in. I got F5 load balancers that are finally ready to start taking some traffic. So I've been real busy and happy about it.
I see you waxing lyrical about your F5s again.
Yeah, I love them. I'm sorry. I'm a fanboy. I love the things. I was just setting up a forwarding virtual server and was making sure it was working right, had TCP dump going, and I was like, oh, it's like coming home, because I worked with them quite a lot at my last job, and it's been a while, a few months since I've really had some stick time with them. So, yep, I love them. Feeling good about it.
Yep, and that is not a paid advertisement. And with us on the show this week is Ken Hanolt. I hope I got that right. Ken from Hewlett-Packard. He's a network architect. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Greg. Hello, Ethan. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, and tell us, what do you do during your working day? What are you doing at HP?
I work with customers in a pre-sales technical consulting role, trying to help them understand how to better utilize Blades and Virtual Connect and the HP portfolio in general.
Okay. So the reason that we managed to drag you onto this into the show this week was because I was having a conversation with somebody at HP in the marketing department about Virtual Connect and expressing my ongoing disappointment with the product, that it's so complicated and so it doesn't seem to be in tune with what I understand. I was quite happy to admit the fact that it might be me that's at fault and thought we'd get somebody on the show who knows all about the Virtual Connect and attempt to convert me to the HP way. So that's your challenge today, Ken. You up for that?
Definitely up for that. Sounds like should be an interesting show.
Okay. We promise to be nice, kind of. I guess the first question is, what's the point of Virtual Connect? Why did HP go out there to create it? Tell me what the business problem is that that's trying to solve.
Blades have been around for 10 years now, and about 5 years into our Blade journey, HP came out with the C-class blade enclosure, and really we saw, that blades were solving a number of problems in the enterprise, but there were still some challenges that were bothering a lot of customers using Virtual Connect. They had the physical problems, right? There was too many cables or too many switches. If you use pass-through modules, you can end up with 32, 64, 128 cables coming out of a back of a blade enclosure. And of course they needed switch ports to go into, so that became a logistical nightmare. Or, you have anywhere from 2 to 8 switches embedded in a blade enclosure, and each one of those being a separate point of management, that's a problem. Yeah. The other one is the organizational problem. Right now we've got server admins and network admins and SAN admins all working in the same piece of sheet metal, essentially. Obviously everybody has their own schedules, things that make them, I should say, let's see. They each have their own schedule and their own priorities. And then you have the issues of agility and resiliency, right? People wanted the ability to think of servers like they do RAID disks, replace one with another or fail, have a spare, and those sorts of things. And those are the type of challenges that HP went after with Virtual Connect.
I think there's two problems around this cabling problem. One is, there's never been a problem with having lots of cables coming out the back of a server. But I think half the challenge came along when a C-class came along and managed to squeeze 8 or 16 blades into, you know, 8 RUs. And all of a sudden it looked like a lot of cables in a little bit of space. I don't see why cabling's been a big problem. Why are people so peeved about having bulk, a lot of cables coming out? Is it because storage networking is overrated?
Long live fiber channel over token ring.
Oh, wow.
That's what we should have been using. Fiber channel over
token. Yeah, storage networking has been around and it's going to continue to be around. You know, it's all about, you know, getting better utilization out of an underutilized resource, whether it's VMware or storage networking, or, you know, those are the sorts of things that are driving IT organizations to implement some of these technologies.
Yeah.
And yeah, you look at the back of an enclosure with four blade enclosures, back of a rack, I should say, with four blade enclosures in there. And I mean, you have a bundle of cables, you know, 12 inches in diameter. You can't manage that many cables. It's just impossible.
Well, I'd argue with that because we did for years. So, but I can see your point. When you've got four chassis, you call them blade enclosures, I'd call them a chassis because we think of switches as chassis. I always have to do syntax matching. So four blade chassis is going to have what could have anything up to 16 blades per. So if you have all the cables coming out and then each chassis, each blade could have, you know, two fiber channels, four or six Ethernets per each, or even four fiber channels and, you know, six Ethernets per each. And then the actual chassis themselves have their management blades and their management connections. And you end up with, you know, great piles of cables coming out the back. So never one to miss an opportunity, a corporation's invented a new way to sell us something new.
Well, and like I said, it's not just the cabling challenge. It's also the organizational challenges, right? How do we create a clean line of demarcation? Who's managing what?
Well, I want to hear more about that, Ken, because I'll tell you, the last C-class that I worked on with Virtual Connect, it was it got to be a fuzzier and more complicated line to draw, where I had guys that were storage and sysadmins that were trying to figure out how in the heck they were supposed to configure this Virtual Connect to talk to the back-end network infrastructure, and just ending up that I ended up walking them through so they could build their port templates and server templates and so on, get all the VLANs and the tagging set up properly, bond everything into port channels and so on, because they were way out of their depth. And yet it seemed like because it was a card that was plugged into the blade enclosure, it should rightfully belong to those guys that were really managing the blade. So it got to be, I don't know that it helped. So I want to understand from HP's perspective how that helps.
Well, one of the things of Virtual Connect is to make it somewhat of a black box, right? I don't want to have to turn a server engineer into a network engineer. Both of those jobs are full-time jobs and, you know, and have quite a learning curve to become competent in them. So Virtual Connect is supposed to kind of be that bridge between the groups so that the network team can present networks into the enclosure, the SAN team can present their storage connections in there, and then the server admin should be able to easily select the network connections and the SAN connections they need to build a server profile. It does take a little bit of planning up front, and, you know, obviously somebody like myself coming in, giving you an overview and some best practices is helpful. But, you know, normally I can get in an account, spend 2 to 4 hours in there just kind of giving them some best practices, and they've got a good idea of where they want to go and how to work between the different groups.
We've got this, you call them a blade. What do you call them? A blade? A chassis. Blade enclosure. And inside the blade enclosure is a number of blades. And then at the back, there's actually a backplane at the back of the chassis, isn't there? Some form of...
Yeah, we refer to it as a midplane in the C-class because it sits in between the servers and the I.O. interconnects at the back.
There's also a mezzanine card tied up in there too, right?
Actually, the mezzanine card sits in inside the blade server, and really a mezzanine card is just a PCI card in a different form factor. It has, you know, electrically, it's identical to any old stand-up PCI card. It's just mechanically, it's a slightly different form factor to fit within the requirements of a Blade.
So a mezzanine card is effectively a NIC?
It can be a NIC. It can be a fiber channel HBA. It could be a InfiniBand adapter. It could even be an iSCSI controller. There's a number of different, because it's a PCI card, so it has a lot of different capabilities depending on which card.
I think of the mezzanine card as what a full-height Blade would use so that he can present a whole lot of additional ports to that server. Is that fair, or would you see it in half-height cards as well?
You see it in half-height servers as well. So let's take a back up and you know, what comes in the Blade enclosure, or I should say a Blade server, is a half-height Blade comes with two NICs on the system board and then two mezzanine slots for additional expansion. When you go to a full-height Blade, you have four NICs on the system board and then up to three more mezzanine slots available for expansion.
Okay, so those NICs you're talking about, they're a Broadcom chipset, just like any other file server would be that's not jammed into a Blade.
Correct, yes, and we use the same Broadcom NICs in our Blade servers as we do in our rack mount ML and DL servers.
Right, and so if I wanted Fibre Channel, I'd go and get a Fibre Channel mezz card.
Correct.
Okay, so if... Yeah. So I don't understand. So now just let me position this. So what's the point of the virtual connect then if you've got mezz cards on the... So the mezz cards is one alternative and a virtual connect is a different set of products altogether?
No. The mezz cards sit inside the server. So you need NICs inside of a server, whether you're connecting to virtual connect or a pass-through module or a Cisco switch or a Nortel switch or any of the I.O. options in there. Same thing on the fiber channel side. You need the appropriate I.O. card to sit inside a server. It's the same whether you're talking about a rack mount server or a Blade server. It doesn't matter. The virtual connect is the I.O. module that goes in the back of the enclosure. So the mid-plane, think of those as your patch cables, right? Going from the mezzanine card or the NIC on the system board to the I.O. devices in the back of the enclosure. Again, those I.O. devices pass through modules, switches, or virtual connect.
So a packet is going to leave a Blade fully formed, hit leave a NIC that's built in, or hit the mezz card if it was an expansion, hit the mid-plane, and then travel up to the I.O. module, where it will then get sent out to the main network or storage, as the case may be.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So the mid-plane's kind of he's the bridge. Everybody's got to go through him. You got servers plugging into him, and you got I.O. modules plugging into him, and he's the arbiter between all of these different servers and then I.O. interfaces.
Well, but he's just a passive device, right? A mid-plane is just traces on a circuit board.
But it's the point of commonality that everybody's got to talk to. Yeah.
Right, but it's important that it be a passive device because obviously you've got a lot of servers depending on that one mid-plane, so it has to be bulletproof.
So it's a backplane like the backplane of an Ethernet switch?
Correct. And like a you know, the top-end enterprise switches, you're going to have a passive backplane because you don't need that to be a single point of failure. If you have any failures, you want it to be an aligned card, which can be easily replaced and just affect that component, not the whole switching device.
The only thing that can affect the backplane is a mechanical failure of some ilk, which is fairly rare with modern manufacturing.
Correct. And those sorts of errors will show up at startup time, not when something's been in production for months or years.
It should be
fairly benign.
Okay, so I've got a mezz card on a Blade. I've got a Blade. Let's just focus on a single pathway, right? I've got a server. On the back of the Blade, I've got some mezz cards installed. I've either got the onboard NICs, which are some suitable Ethernet chipset, or I've installed some fiber channel mezz cards. Those cards are then piped into a passive backplane at the back of the Blade enclosure, and then I'm going to have a module that then interfaces to the physical network. Is that the virtual connect module?
Exactly. Yes, virtual connect is one of the options there. Like I said, we could also do the pass-through or traditional switching.
So we've got three options there. So we've got virtual connect, pass-through, or traditional switching.
Correct.
Okay, so let's go through. I think what we'll do is go through them in order: pass through, then switching, and then virtual connect. Because my understanding is that's the level of complexity from lowest to highest.
Okay, sounds good.
A pass through module, as I understand it, literally presents the MES cards on a given blade on a physical port. It's like a patch panel.
Precisely. Couldn't be any simpler than that.
Right. And there's
so that's a 1-to-1 ratio. There's no intelligence, there's no correlation. It truly is just what it sounds like, a pass through. You gotta patch that pass through port into a switch port or storage or whatever the case may be.
Yes. It's that simple.
So there must be blank ports in those, because a given blade could have, you know, a full height blade could have a dozen ports in it, or whatever the number is.
Well, right. So each port is mapped to an I/O bay in the back of the enclosure. So in the case of a half height blade, we'll take the simplest case first, right?
Yep.
There's two onboard NICs, so you always have two NICs. And those are mapped to bays 1 and 2, the top two bays in the back of the enclosure.
Okay, when we talk about bays, let's just translate that into network speak. A bay is a slot in a chassis. So if you look at a slot bay switch like a ProCurve, we don't call them bays, we call them slots.
Right. So we'll call it an IO slot, because IO slots are in the back of the enclosure and then server slots are in the front.
Yeah, okay.
So the two, and we use the term LOM, LAN on motherboard, for the two onboard NICs. So two LOMs go to bays 1 and 2. Then you have the first mezzanine slot. Those only have two connections, and those would go to bays 3 and 4. And then you have a quad port capable mezzanine slot 2. So if I could put a quad port NIC in there and go to bays 5, 6, 7, and 8. So on the back of each of those pass-through modules, each one would have 16 ports, one to each of the 16 half-height server bays.
So slot 1 and 2 at the top would always have two connections from a blade. There'll be one connection on the left and one connection on the right, one in slot 1 and one in slot 2. Okay, so if I'm going with a pass-through configuration, I've got 8 slots in the back of the C-class chassis.
Correct.
Blade, I've got a C-class chassis with just one blade in it. That blade's got two onboard Ethernet ports. I need to present those two Ethernet ports for a standard dual-homed configuration to the network. So I would buy two pass-through modules to go into slot 1 and slot 2 in the back.
Yes.
And some predetermined port on that is going to be the patch port for that blade.
Right, so the server that goes in bay 1, server bay 1, or slot 1 on the front of the enclosure would come out port 1 of that pass-through module, and then server bay 16 is going to come out port 16. So it's a direct 1-to-1 mapping.
That's slot 1 and slot 2. Now, slot 3 and slot 4 would be used for whatever MES cards you put into the back of that blade.
Correct. To go inside the blade. It's not in the back of the blade. You'd actually have to open the blade up.
Physically clip a card, physically slot a card into the MES slot.
Correct.
Okay. Now that could be a fiber channel card, or it could be an Ethernet card. Or
yes,
an InfiniBand.
Or InfiniBand, SAS, or yeah, there's a number of cards. Graphics cards can even go in there for the workstation blades.
Okay. So now I have slot 3 and 4. I have a bunch of ports across the back. So on slot 3 or 4, according to the MES card, which is physically installed into the blade, it could be Ethernet, Ethernet, fiber channel, fiber channel.
Correct.
And then InfiniBand, InfiniBand, according to what's physically installed on that card.
Right. Right. And you've got one of the key points that whatever mezzanine cards you have inside the blade, you have to have the corresponding IO module in the IO slot at the back of the enclosure.
Okay. And that's pass through. So really what you're actually saying there is that the C-class chassis is a piece of bent metal encapsulating a bunch of Intel motherboards, and you're presenting them in a predetermined pattern at the back. And I guess that we could continue to go on through slots 5, 6, and 7, 8 according to the module. You would only get to slot 7 and 8 for certain predetermined server modules that can have that many NICs installed.
Exactly. A half height maxes out at 6 IO connections.
And a full height maxes out at 8.
at 16 because it's going to get the eighth from each of the half-height bays it's occupying. So, for example, if I had a full-height blade in bay 1, it's actually occupying bay 1 and bay 9, which is the bay directly below it. And so I would have Nyx showing up in ports 1 and 9 on the pass-through module and both coming out of that same blade.
Because it takes up two physical slots in the actual box. Effectively, a full-height blade is actually taking up two slots. So it can, yeah.
Exactly.
I can grok that. Okay. So now let's talk about switchblades.
Well, before we do, Ken, I mean, how many people actually buy a pass-through configured blade enclosure? I would think that's not a very popular option.
Exactly. It's very rare. I think that's our lowest selling option. Because when you look at the cost of the cables, the cost of the pass-through modules, and then you still have to buy upstream switch ports, it ends up being the most expensive solution.
Expensive solution. It's still a lot of cables to manage and no intelligent built into the back of the C-Class. And you're on your own to figure out redundancy and so on.
Correct, yes.
But that's the methodology we've used for the last 10 years.
Well, we're trying to get a little smarter with time, I hope.
Sure, okay. So let's move then to the switch module. This is a module that goes into the back of the C-Class in any of the slots. Can it go slot 1, slot 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or does it have to be in specific slots in the back?
It just has to be in a slot that's connected to the I.O. module or the mezzanine card within the server. So, but yes, any of the eight slots can take an I.O. module, a switch module in the I.O. bays.
And when we say switch module, what are we really talking about? Are we talking about something that HP manufactured running an HP network device operating system on it? So it's kind of a, you know, unique device there, or are we talking about something a third party's manufactured for HP?
Well, that's one of the strengths of virtual connectors, of C-Class blades, is that we have a wide array of partners in there. We have Cisco 3020s and 3120s.
You choked a little bit when you said that, didn't you? You kind of threw up in your mouth a little.
No, not at all. They're a partner. It's all about co-opetition. Everybody's partner is a competitor, right? So I can't think of a partner that we have that we don't compete with at some level and vice versa. So that's just the nature of the IT industry today. You know, we've got the blade network technology. We've got our Broadcom switches. We got Brocade switches. We've got a mix of vendors that make switches in there.
So not just Cisco switches, you've got the blade technologies and your Broadcom, as well as your own?
Yes.
So now I've got somebody's Ethernet switching fabric installed into the back plane, connected to the mid plane, as you call it, or the back plane. And then the MES cards that you've installed and the onboard cards are then mapped to various ports on the switch. Is that sort of like there's a predetermined switching pattern for those?
Exactly. So most of the switches will have 8 uplinks coming out of them. So they're just like any other 24-port switch, right? I've got 16 ports that each go down to one of the half-height server bays, and then 8 ports coming out of the back of the enclosure for uplinks and other uses.
So now, I guess for networking people, that would be fairly traditional. Port 1-1 would be module 1. Port 1, port 2 something or another would be module 2. Or there's some arbitrary mapping scheme which you would just have to work out how it goes, I suppose.
And it's fairly straightforward, right? So bay 1, the server in bay 1 at the front of the enclosure is always going to be mapped to port 1 of whatever switch it is. That's kind of a standard we keep throughout, so you always know which server's at which port.
Okay. Well, I didn't find it very easy, but anyway, we can keep pushing on.
Most of our conversation, we really want to hit up on virtual connect. I mean, I think we get the magic of what the switch is really doing there. It's second power and acting as an arbitrator between the main network and the back plane of the C-Class. It's not real magical.
So if I've got a NIC punched into a switch, bang, away we go. Okay. So, Ken?
So now comes the purpose of this call is the Virtual Connect, the secret sauce here. So Virtual Connect is a layer 2 bridging device. We prefer not to call it a switch because it doesn't do a lot of switch things, right? I can't use it as a transit device. If, for example, I had a Cisco switch in the back of my enclosure, I could have one uplink going on my corporate network, and then I could plug a server in there and as well as serving the blades within the enclosure, that switch could service another server in the rack. Virtual Connect doesn't do that. It also doesn't participate in data center spanning tree, and that was very deliberate. I mean, that was one of our key design goals. I can't tell you how many people misconfigured a switch in a blade enclosure and then caused all sorts of spanning tree havoc. So that made a lot of blade customers nervous about putting a switch within the blade enclosure.
Virtual Connect, then, is not a switch. It's not a switching fabric. It has no spanning tree. So if it's not that, how does it add to the value of the aggregation? What's it delivering that's unique?
Well, it's still doing basic layer 2 bridging, right? It doesn't have all the enterprise class features we would normally expect to see in a switch. There's other analogies for that within the data center today, right? If we look at a vSwitch within VMware, it's pretty much analogous to how the Virtual Connect module works. And even the Cisco UCS 6100s, they refer to those as not a switch for the exact same reason.
Okay, so let me go back to basic principle. I've still missed something here. I've got a NIC on a motherboard. That NIC is sending out IP packets to the Virtual Connect module. What's the Virtual Connect module doing with that IP packet?
It is going to do the layer 2 bridging, much like an Ethernet switch would, to send it to where it belonged, on the uplink string, up on the uplink ports, or within the enclosure, wherever it needs to go.
So a Virtual Connect module would be, say, dual 10 gigs down to a network core. They would be VLAN trunked. And then there would be a configuration on the Virtual Connect module that then says this VLAN goes to that NIC over there.
Exactly.
Right. Now, the Virtual Connect module, I guess, of the more I sort of talk through this, the more it's sort of I'm sort of getting to grips with the idea. So you could either say that mezzanine card is getting an access port, that Ethernet chipset is either being presented as an access port, or you can present it as a VLAN trunk. But the Virtual Connect port might say you only want to present these VLANs to that one in slot 1 and these VLANs to that one in slot 2 and so forth and so on.
Right. So I can bring in networks either, you know, one at a time on separate uplinks. I can bring them in on, you know, a VLAN trunk. I can aggregate multiple uplinks using LACP. So there's quite a bit of flexibility on how I configure the networks.
So you also so just to jump on something there, you said that the Virtual Connect support LACP in their own right. So you wouldn't configure, so if your Virtual Connect module is running LACP, bonding two channels, so bonding two 1 gigs into a 2 gig channel, or bonding two 10s into one 20 gig channel, is that correct?
Correct.
But right. You're limited in that, though, if I remember right. Tell me if I'm wrong here, Ken, but you couldn't do that across Virtual Connect modules. So if you had a couple of them in your blade enclosure, a couple of different VC modules, you couldn't do an LACP that spanned those two physical Virtual Connects. Unless something's changed.
Nope, we're not supporting that today, but we still can do a form of active-active networking for customers who don't want to have, you know, an active standby configuration, and I saw that in some of your earlier notes there. What we do is basically configure two networks carrying the same VLAN. Virtual Connect will keep them separate, right? So we have, you know, VLAN 101, for example, in the left module, VLAN 101 also in the right module, and we present both of those two networks to a pair of NICs in the server. And then, for example, if it was an ESX server, I could bring those two NICs into the same vSwitch and have active-active networking all the way through.
And with obviously the redundancy there in that if you lose a virtual connect module, the uplink fails, you've still got the other half of your bandwidth, so to speak.
Exactly. So, and but when everything's up and running, I've got my full bandwidth. I'm not in an active standby mode wasting half of my bandwidth.
So what's the load balancing scheme then? You're relying on the host to present his data to two different NICs so that they therefore get load balanced across the VCs, or?
Exactly, yeah. The NIC's gonna, the server is going to have to balance across the NICs.
Gotcha.
Okay, so just to recap that, make sure I get a grip on that. You can either do LACP to the virtual connect module itself in certain specified conditions. That is, virtual connect modules are in sort of conceptually in pairs to do LACP. Or you could actually choose to say, I'm going to pass the VLANs through and let the actual software on the OS on the blades do the LACP there itself.
Well, in that case, it wouldn't be LACP. No, I think you've misunderstood that. So let me go back.
If I'm it'd be like a teaming thing. If you're going to try to, if you want the, want it to be an active, you're going to have to do a network teaming or something because the LACP protocol won't span. You can't make a member of a port on one virtual connect module and a port on another virtual connect module be part of the same LACP bundle. It's instead you're talking, Ken, I'm going to take two NICs that I'm presenting to this server, map one to one virtual connect module, map the other to the other virtual connect module, then rely on the server to do network teaming, for lack of a better term, to do it and get your load balancing.
Right. So that's if we're going to do active across the two modules. I can do that and still do LACP to an individual module. So I could bring in two 10-gig uplinks to the module on the left, two 10-gig uplinks to the module on the right, and then still do the aggregation at the server level.
And in that case, the LACP doesn't pass all the way through to the host. It's you're actually terminating the LACP on the virtual connect module. So you've got a switch LACP to 10 gig links, let's say, and it terminates that LACP intelligence terminates on the virtual connect, and then the virtual connect kind of sits in the middle of the host on the other inside the blade.
Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm still not getting it.
This is one of those cases where it would be good if we had a video podcast here and I could draw you a whiteboard session.
Well, just wave your arms around wildly. That's yeah. What
I am. Can't you see?
So, okay, let me talk. Let me go invariant. Pull out the pieces I do understand. I understand that you could pass through two ether channels, two channels of Ethernet or two Ethernet connections from the switches directly through the virtual connects to the server, and then the server itself does the LACP. So that's kind of a given.
I don't think I don't think that is right, Ken? I mean, it doesn't go through the virtual connect back to the servers.
Not the LACP doesn't. The connection does, but there's no LACP in there.
Well, the connection doesn't even. It's not like a physical, bridge through. I mean, the Ethernet frame is going to leave the blade, hit virtual connect. Virtual connect's then going to grab that frame and route it somewhere, or forward it somewhere, I should say. It's not, there's no virtual circuit that's been made between the data center network, if you will, and the server inside the blade enclosure through the virtual connect. The virtual connect sits in the middle. Right. And he's going to handle that frame intelligently.
Right. So he does, the virtual connect module does MAC learning and it does forwarding based on, traditional layer two rules.
So who's terminating the LACP pair? The virtual connect or the server?
The virtual connect in all cases.
In all cases?
In all cases.
So you can never do NIC teaming in a server ever?
Correct.
Well, LACP.
Not using active or, switch-assisted load balancing in Windows terminology or... What is it? Bond mode. I'm not sure what the mode. I have to look those up.
So once you have a virtual connect module installed, LACP is configured on the virtual connect, and that's it. There's no LACP to the servers. The servers just can't be configured to have two NICs bonded into a single unit in VMware, for example.
Right, but in VMware, it doesn't really matter because I can just present two independent NICs to a vSwitch, and what what ESX will do is round robin across them. So the first VM will go out the first path, the second VM, the second, you know, first, second, round robin. And then if there's any failure, obviously they'll go to the surviving path.
Okay. Because a virtual switch can have multiple downlinks, but you don't necessarily LACP them together, bond them together.
Correct.
Okay. I think I get that. Got the virtual, we got switch, we got pass, we've got a virtual connect. I guess we should talk about fiber channel for a bit, shouldn't we?
Fiber channel is the easiest piece, right? All we're doing there is using virtual connect as an NPIV device. So I just define the SANs I'm connected through, and it's almost like a pass through. The SAN guys usually just get it. They don't have much problem understanding how virtual connect impacts them. It's a lot simpler than it is on the network side.
Well, now, are you buying a separate virtual connect module to do SAN stuff, or do you have Ethernet SAN all on the same VC?
We probably segue into a little bit of the history of virtual connect so we understand where we are and where we're going, right? So virtual connect started as a 1 gig Ethernet and then a 4 gig fiber channel. They were the two separate devices. That's the state of the art 5 years ago, pretty much. Then about 3 years ago, 10 gigabit Ethernet hit the price point where it started being economical to put it down on the server. But folks didn't really need 10 gig pipes. I mean, they're pretty hard to drive that much bandwidth from a single server. What they needed was lots of connections, especially if you think about a typical ESX solution. You know, you got your service console, you got your vMotion, you got your production networks. Maybe you do backup or iSCSI or other things. So, you know, it's easy to come up with three or four networks for your average ESX host. And geez, it would be nice if those were redundant as well. So what we decided to do, or what HP decided to do, was give users the ability to carve that 10 gig pipe into four flex NICs. So what it's doing is creating a physical device, a separate PCI physical function for each of those devices. And we've been using physical functions for years, right? So if you think of a quad port NIC, for example, that's one PCI device with four physical functions. So in this case, we created a dual port 10 gig NIC, and it has, out of those two ports, it has eight functions, four on one NIC, four on the other, and each can carve up a section of that 10 gig bandwidth, giving you the eight flex NICs that a traditional ESX host might like. So that was a big advancement and really cut down on the number of devices you had to buy, the power required. I mean, you could save, I think, up to $50,000, $60,000, maybe even $70,000 for a blade enclosure by replacing traditional switching with a Flex 10.
So you're talking about fiber channel switching here, like storage switching, or are you talking about Ethernet switching, or both?
Ethernet, 10 gigabit Ethernet switching only at this point.
Okay.
And obviously, in about that same time, fiber channel went from 4 gig to 8 gig. But again, it's just a speed bump, really. No major functionality changes.
Yeah, I'm still lost on FlexNICs. Ethan, can you help me out here?
Well, I was trying to figure out. I'm actually looking at a diagram now about the VC Flex, Flex 10 that shows this concept of these 8 1 gigs kind of getting carved out of a 10 gig. And I was trying to understand what's really going on there. I mean, is it like you've got a hardware where there's eight 1 gig ports being presented back to the servers, and they just happen to get consolidated into a 10 gig on the front side of it, if you will? Or is there, you know, is this a software thing? What's really happening here? I mean, what's on the, when the virtual connect module plugs into the IO bus, what is actually being presented out to the servers for them to connect to?
So the physical connection between the virtual connect module and the server in a Flex 10 system is a pair of 10 gig connections. to bays 1 and 2. Again, you know, just like any other thing we have. So the components again are the Virtual Connect Flex 10 modules in the back of the enclosure, and then a pair of Flex 10 ports on the system board. What we're doing is we're going to do Q and Q from the Flex 10 to the driver that's sitting on the server, and inside there they break that up into the four separate logical ports. We call those Flex NICs, and those are presented to the operating system as a separate PCI device. Again,
like a vSwitch does vNICs, and to present to the whatever operating system is sitting on the host. It sounds like a similar kind of thing. You really, it's a 10 gig hardware, but it's virtualized in software to be, you know, 1 gig interfaces that get presented up to the blades.
And actually, it's more than 1 gig, right? So those four ports are sharing up to a 10 gig connection. So, you know, I could just give four 2.5 gig pipes. I could make, you know, a pair of 1 gigs and a pair of 4 gigs. You slice and dice that however you want. I could even just make one 10 gig connection if I wanted to. It's your pipe to carve up as needed.
Okay, and that I assume is kind of a unique feature of Virtual Connect. That's a, you know, something different than you would get in a switch module that you would put in, and obviously not a pass through at all.
Right. That's Flex 10 was really a watershed product for us in the Virtual Connect space. I mean, that really just you know, saved people a lot of money and really got good market acceptance.
It, just for curiosity's sake here, I mean, some people are probably listening to this and thinking about QoS and that kind of thing, wondering how are you actually doing the carving? Is there a packet shaper algorithm that's actually happening there to make that work?
We're essentially just using pause frames and doing rate limiting.
Sounds a bit like data center Ethernet and some of the things that are happening there. Is there any connection between what you're doing with Flex 10 and, you know, data center Ethernet, the way that you can set up virtualized channels across a 10 gig and send pause frames for individual virtualized channels and so on?
So, no, we're not. I mean, we're not using per priority flow control or any of the new DCB protocols with Flex 10. We're just using traditional Ethernet pause. I mean, you know,
it's your own thing. It may be reminiscent of some of the new stuff with DCB, but not exactly what you're doing here. Okay.
Well, you think about it, you know, if your ISP at home sells you a certain bandwidth, they're doing the same exact sort of rate limiting, right? Whatever level of service you paid for, their network device is going to rate limit you to that bandwidth that you've bought. Virtual Connect works the same way. If you start trying to overrun what's allocated for you, we'll start sending you pause frames, just the same pause frames you'd get if the buffers were full on the upstream switch.
All right, so now bring Fibre Channel into this conversation.
So earlier this year, we announced, and this week we just started shipping our Flex Fabric module. This is our first FCOE offering for the C-class blades. The interesting thing about this is to enable FCOE with our new G7 blades, all you have to buy is a pair of the Flex Fabric Virtual Connect modules that go in the back of the enclosure. On the G7 blades, we have our Flex Fabric adapters built into the system board. And Flex Fabric adapters kind of like a CNA on steroids, right? So not only does it have the traditional CNA functionality of Ethernet and fiber channel connectivity, we also bring along our Flex 10 capability that we had started shipping a couple years earlier. And we also add the ability to do iSCSI offload, full iSCSI offload, and boot from iSCSI configured as part of the server profile.
So with Flex Fabric then, and I'm now looking wildly on the HP site trying to bring up the specs on that, is that even available yet? You said it was just announced.
No, it was just started shipping. We announced it back in June. And we just started shipping. So hp.com/go/flexfabric. Make it easy on you. And, you know, the way they position it is HP Virtual Connect Flex Fabric module provides server administrators the simplest, most flexible way to connect servers to any virtual machine to the LAN and SAN with no extra mezzanine cards or software licenses to buy. So it's just, you know, the hardware's there on the system board. You buy the Virtual Connect modules. We do FCOE across the midplane of the server. It's an 8-port device or a 24-port device, right? You got 16 10 gig ports going down to the server, 8 ports coming out the back. 4 ports are dedicated to Ethernet, and then the other four ports could be Ethernet or native fiber channel.
There's some sort of interface module there that puts native fiber channel into a flex fabric.
The Flex Fabric is the interface module, so it'll take in native fiber channel, and then wrap that in an Ethernet header and create the FCOE packet that it sends down to the CNA.
In the midplane, across the midplane.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're not presenting, or you could. So Flex Fabric module in the back of a C class, running FCOE down to the server, across the midplane into the MES cards. And so the server's then seeing FCOE traffic for fiber channel-based storage, and you've also got opportunities for traditional Ethernet, and then also the Flex Fabric's got iSCSI acceleration or iSCSI capabilities as well, shared between all of the blades in the chassis. Flex Fabric module is physically in the back, and it's got fiber channel connectivity as well as 10 gig Ethernet connectivity.
I think you said it better than I did.
And then what about DCB? Implicitly, if you do an FCOE, there must be some sort of DCB spec that you're observing here.
Right. So obviously, we're going to use the per priority flow control, to enable that lossless Ethernet to support the FCOE packets across the midplane. So that's in there. And the nice thing, despite what many in the industry, or some in the industry, I should say, would like you to think, FCOE is still somewhat of an evolving standard. There's multi-hop issues that still have to be worked out and interoperability issues. And so the nice thing about the way
customers have
HP
to buy it.
Has approached it, from my point of view, well, it's within the enclosure, right? I'm not – everything that I'm exposing to my external – infrastructure is traditional Ethernet and traditional fiber channel. So having in a bounded solution, I can get the cost savings and flexibility of FCOE in that, you know, I'm buying less switches, less virtual connect modules. I don't have to buy HBAs because I'm using the CNA on the system board, et cetera. But I don't have the risk because I don't have to worry about the interoperability issues and evolving standards.
Yeah, because you're not trying to guess it. Because at the moment, we're still talking about the argument between Trill and SPB, and one of them requires new silicon to switch it, and so forth. And then the issue about how far you can actually do traffic shaping for priority flow control is, you know, there's a finite limit to how far priority flow control can work because of the latency of propagation.
Right, and you know, I like to think of per priority flow control as a traffic signal, right? We've all been in an old town where they have independent traffic signals and one turns red as the other turns green and you never go anywhere because there's always a red light somewhere in the way. Hmm. You know, I think one of the things that might be our salvation there, I'm hoping this will be it, is QCN, right? Quantized congestion notification. Hmm. And when we get into end-to-end congestion management using something like QCN, you can kind of think of it almost as synchronized traffic lights, you know, and you get into a nice modern shopping area, you know, you see a sea of 20 lights ahead of you and they all turn green at the same time. So you might stop at that first red light, but then you can make it through the next dozen green lights. And I think that's kind of a good analogy for the difference between per priority flow control and a QCN.
I'm not convinced that, well, all of these technologies you're talking about all hark back to my mainframe days. So when I first started out in networking, it was all DLSW and SNA. And QCN and PFC sound exactly like things that we did with native SNA tunneling and switching and LU6.2s and all that sort of stuff. And it didn't work back then either. So I remain to be convinced. I'm not saying there's not clever people out there who might make it go, but I remain to be convinced.
Everything old is new again.
Yeah.
So. Well, and that's the other thing, right, is Virtual Connect is a family of products. I'm not, just because you buy a G7 blade doesn't mean you have to do FCOE. You can still, the G7 blades, you can still put an HBA in there. You can mix flex fabric FCOE with traditional fiber channel. It's not a, you make a purchase decision and you're stuck with it, right? If you find something's not working, you can always go and add a fiber channel card later and boom, we're back to traditional fiber channel.
Okay, so what you're saying there is slot 1 or 2 can have a flex fabric module, but there's nothing stopping you from slot 3 or 4 having a traditional fiber channel card.
Exactly. Or you can add more flex 10 Ethernet. And that's another advantage, right? I've got all those ports in there. I mean, I could easily put 60 gigabits of Ethernet into a single server.
Yeah. You wouldn't need that much, but you could try.
Yeah, I challenge anybody to use that much bandwidth for anything meaningful in a standard server, but it's there if you need it.
That's right. Okay, so perhaps the confusing part about this is, while we just focus on the modules, right? You've got Virtual Connect fiber channel modules, Virtual Connect Ethernet modules, which are fundamentally just presenting Ethernet ports forward, presenting fiber channel ports forward, and then there's some smarts, some software configuration that allows them to add value to that those Ethernet and fiber channel connections. And then you've got the Flex 10 module, which allows you to slice and dice the 10 gig. It bonds multiple 10 gigs together and then allows you to slice and dice them and then deliver them to multiple parts of the fabric in a more flexible way. So where the Virtual Connect Ethernet modules or the fiber channel modules have certain rules about what they can do and where they can direct them, the Flex 10 gives you more flexibility. And then the Flex Fabric takes that to its endpoint, where you're fundamentally using fiber channel over Ethernet to do in-rack or in-chassis switching of fiber channel, converged fiber channel and Ethernet over one infrastructure and then extracting it as fiber channel or Ethernet from the back of the chassis. And the Flex Fabric's got more software configuration even than the Flex 10 had. Is that a reasonable summary?
Yes, that's a reasonable summary. And I think the next thing we'd want to get into is the whole, you know, of agility and resiliency of you know, abstracting a server profile.
There's one product that sits over this called Virtual Connect Manager or Virtual Connect Enterprise Manager. Is there two products or is there just one?
There's actually two products. So when you buy Virtual Connect, you get Virtual Connect Manager that runs on the module itself. It's an embedded management interface. It has a web UI and also an SSH UI. So you can, you know, either through a GUI or a CLI, whichever you were comfortable with. And that's for a single Virtual Connect domain at a time. A Virtual Connect domain can be between 1 to 4 chassis of C7000 or enclosures. If you want to go beyond that as a single management domain, that's where you get into Virtual Connect Enterprise Manager. Slight additional fee, you can license individual enclosures, and then you can manage up to 250 Virtual Connect domains, you know, so each domain could have 4. So you could have 1,000 enclosures all in one Virtual Connect domain and 16,000 servers all managed from a single user interface using VCEM.
And there's one guy that does it, and his name is Bob, and he's never allowed to be sick.
No, you better, Bob better cross train somebody, and if he doesn't like sharing, he better find a new job, right? Because I that's one of my pet peeves, is people who don't share, because we've all run into them in our IT organizations.
Well, I assume that it obviously it wouldn't just be one guy with this thing. There's a way you can carve up this domain into subsets and say, hey, this team is going to manage these blades and this team is going to these enclosures and this team is going to manage these and so on. So you can kind of delegate that out.
Exactly. Or you can, there's no reason more than one person couldn't be working on the same group of servers. I mean, obviously only one person's going to work at on a single server at a time, but multiple users can be in Virtual Connect Manager or Virtual Connect Enterprise Manager at the same time.
I find this groups of four domains to be a little bit arbitrary. I mean, potentially because you wouldn't have more than four chassis in a single rack. So this software is sort of saying, well, we manage them a rack at a time. So 142RU would never normally have more than four C-class chassis in it because of the power loading. But I find comprehending the difference between Virtual Connect Manager and Virtual Connect Enterprise Manager very difficult, and even more so the pricing, because the pricing model for the two is very divergent and, in fact, rapidly ramps up into shockingly expensive.
Well, there's been new pricing modules for Enterprise Manager now. We have what's called Enterprise Bundles, and it's two Virtual Connect modules along with a Enterprise Manager, so presumably enough for each enclosure. And I think you'll find the pricing has become a lot more reasonable using those Enterprise Bundles.
For the smaller shops that don't have lots and lots of blade enclosures, where do you find it makes sense to buy the manager product that that would manage a group of blade enclosures? Where does it make sense to do that instead of an individual, just manage each Virtual Connect individually?
Yeah, three or four enclosures, I definitely wouldn't think about Enterprise Manager yet. When you get up to a dozen or two dozen enclosures, you really should be an Enterprise Manager, and then you've always got the gray area in between, right?
Okay.
I still have security concerns about Virtual Enterprise Manager too, because multi-tenancy becomes a challenge in those environments.
Well, if you're getting into multi-tenancy and all that stuff, then you really want to get into something more like a blade system matrix, right? Where you're managing logical servers at that point, and you want to abstract even another layer from the hardware. You don't want to be there touching hardware that much. You want to be managing services, not servers, so to speak.
Okay, well, it's probably outside of the scope of today, but we might talk about that at some point in the future. Let me throw you a couple of questions. We've asked some of the people who follow us on the Twitter to throw some questions at us. Sim Alum writes, please ask why Virtual Connect has so many firmware updates. He's had problems replacing a fail module that has different firmware, which has led to lost configs. So I guess his question is, why is there so many firmware updates for the Virtual Connect modules?
Well, when it was, a couple of years ago when Virtual Connect was new, there was a fair amount of firmware churn, and I think that's kind of normal for a new product. Lately, we've been, it's been three or four months per firmware release, and mostly those are related to either new hardware or new features. So the firmware churn has definitely gone down quite a bit over the last year or so.
You think it'll stabilize more going forward?
Oh, it's definitely, that's a key goal for us. We know that, the firmware churn we had at the early phases of Virtual Connect were not tenable over the long haul. And I think you'd find that, looking at a lot of other similar products as well. When products are new, they tend to change more dynamically.
I take it upgrading the firmware on a Virtual Connect module is scheduled maintenance window because you're going to take an outage unless you've got redundancy built in.
Right. Well, I mean, we always implement things in pairs in the C-class enclosure, right? So you have, assuming you do NIC teaming and, have MPIO set up on the server, you should be able to do an upgrade without any downtime. The Virtual Connect support utility that does the firmware upgrade activates them one at a time, left to right, sort of, so that, if you had proper network design, you shouldn't have any outages. But, there's a lot of things that could be done wrong at the server end to prevent that from working as desired. So
sure.
You know, best practices is to play with this stuff in the lab and know how your enclosures work in maintenance tasks before you try to do those things live.
So we got another question from Twitter from Stuart Howland. He asks, the way he puts it, he says, if the network guys are screwing with the servers and the server guys are not going to be too excited about that, so why is it okay the other way around? You know what he's getting at. I mean, because the server guys, it's kind of the point I was making earlier. The server guys tend up ending up configuring the virtual connect modules. You know, and if anything, the network guys, you know, come in and kind of help them out, but don't end up owning that. So, you know, and if, from an HP mindset, why do things go that way?
Well, the whole purpose of a server profile is, you know, that the network administrator's kind of drawn a box around what the server guy can do, because he's not going to see everything. He's only going to see the VLANs that have been presented by the external network, right? It should be fairly straightforward and well-defined what's going on in there.
Let me ask you a different kind of a question then. Since you work on the pre-sale side and you work with some of these guys and do explanation of best practice handoff and that kind of thing. What do you recommend? Do you say your network guy should get in here and really set up the infrastructure, the networking components here for you, help you build up the server profiles and all of that, provision the VLANs, and then what, hand it over to the server guys to kind of use those profiles that were built? I mean, what do you see happening in shops as folks deploy Virtual Connect?
Well, think about, you know, how a normal enclosure set up, like ESX obviously is a lion's share of the market. You know, you're going to get a couple of networks for the service console, a couple of networks for vMotion, and then a couple of networks that might be a VLAN trunk for all their production networks. And a lot of times it doesn't have to be a whole lot more complex than that. It's, you know, you design your networks for the blade enclosure based on the sophistication of the people who are managing it. If you're going to be doing a lot of complex networking in there, maybe you want the network team to be managing Virtual Connect. But but generally, you know, the server edge doesn't have to be all that complex.
I guess my view on that, Ethan, has changed a little bit recently, and I've come around to basically regarding as the Virtual Connects and the Cisco UCS engines are still NICs. They're sort of like there's two ways of looking at a Virtual Connect or a UCS NIC, and that's to say it's either part of the network or it's part of the server. But at the end of the day, none of these fancy NICs that we're talking about, because ultimately Virtual Connect is a fancy NIC at the end of the day, it's still a NIC. And I don't want to be configuring NICs. I want server guys to do that. In fact, as a networking guy, I don't want to be configuring switch ports myself. I would much rather say, you know, server guys are ultimately qualified to configure NICs, as far as I'm concerned. And I would rather spend my time with network monitoring and VPN configurations and policy and training the networking guy, the server guys, to do intelligent stuff instead of, and then catching them out so I can say, I told you so.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, and in total fairness to Ken, I'm trying to put him inside a box that isn't really there in my mind either. But just the way the question was phrased, that is the way a lot of folks think with this crossover that's in. I mean, because you got the same problem in ESX. You got a vSwitch, and everyone's used to having a clear line drawn. But now that networking functionality in complexity that's greater than this is a NIC, I'm going to assign an IP address and a default gateway to it and I'm done. Now you've got tagging going on very commonly in LACP, things that a lot of the server guys don't have. So because the concepts bleed over, it's a training thing for those guys. You as the network guy train the server admins how to deal with those things, and then off you go. And Greg, I'm with you in that I've ended up with the exact same kind of thing. I work with those guys, explain to them what's going on, and then leave them to configure it, help them out if things aren't connecting up right, and that's it. Because I'm in the same place. I don't have the cycles for that.
I would much rather spend my time configuring a management platform that's doing all the things that are getting me the information I need to know, or researching the next generation of technologies to give me better switching or, you know, more scale, or, you know, working on the firewall upgrade that I need to be doing, or getting that VPN project off the ground, than I would be twitching ports. And I see it as a benefit. I've gone from why are server guys moving into the networking space to saying these things are just fancy nicks and it's taking away trivial work that I didn't want to do in the first place. And you'll sort of...
There's an element of feeling threatened, I think. If you're the network guy and you're so used to controlling every minute detail of your network, and now you've got some box out there, some packet generator that all of a sudden can tag and do LACP and whatever else that it didn't used to be able to do, some guys are going to get nervous about that. But at some point, I think you've got to let go of that. And
Well, my point would be is you've got to let go of that and work on the tools that solve the problem. Instead of treating the symptom, solve the cause. So the symptom of you're saying you don't know enough about your network, so you spend your time twitching at ports and setting VLANs and checking which servers are on which ports. But that doesn't fix the underlying cause. The underlying cause is that traffic flows across your network cause congestion or risk to your network. So what you need to be doing is instead of twitching around taking a pill for a headache, you need to be working out what causes the headache and making sure that you don't have the headache anymore. So I would rather spend my time researching my network and looking at the architecture of the structure and putting in bigger switches or moving smaller switches where they need to be or changing the traffic shaping in the backplane instead of switching, going to a port and saying, this is VLAN 110, and turning up ports every time a server, I've got better things to do with my life than Twitch. You know, I want to be doing fun stuff. So that's my answer to Stuart Hallett's question. We've had another question in from one of our buddies, Bob Plankers, and he's curious to know if you're going to do more to do deeper integration with vSphere, Ken. So there are other switch vendors out there, for example, which are pulling VMware APIs to get a very tight sort of integration between their virtualization platforms. Have you got any plans in that space to bring out, say, vSphere plugins and stuff like that?
Oh yeah, we just released a vSphere plugin at the, or actually a virtual center plugin at the beginning of this month, that lets you see the network connection from the virtual machine through the VMware switch, vSwitch through virtual connect, all in one diagram within virtual center. People should go out there and take a look for that. That's a really cool plugin. Lets you have visualize because you've got a couple of layers of networking in there, and it's You see it all in one screen at once. It starts making sense real fast.
Okay. And Richard Vodden has asking what he thinks is an obvious question, which he said, when FCOE and ROCE are ubiquitous, what possible relevance will Virtual Connect have?
ROCE?
RDMA over Converged Ethernet. So RDMA is the technology that InfiniBand uses to virtualize their traffic flows and do I/O connectivity between boxes. And they're now bringing the RDMA feature from InfiniBand down to Ethernet. Will FCOE make Virtual Connect irrelevant, I guess is the question.
No, we're using FCOE with Virtual Connect. I mean, something still has to manage that edge connection. And we really didn't get into the whole the benefits of the server profiles, right? So before, one of the problems was that a lot of things in the infrastructure tie to the personality of the server. You know, if I'm using DHCP, I've got reservations that are set to the MAC address. Maybe I have licenses that apply to a MAC address. I've got storage that's presented to a worldwide name. I have applications that are licensed to a system serial number. All these things mean my application becomes welded to a piece of hardware. And it becomes really hard to move that application around. And let's face it, we're going to cloud-based environments and want to move things around.
Oh, you said cloud.
I was just going to, I actually caught myself nodding off there because he started to talk like a server guy. I was getting a bit, my head nearly hit the desk. I'm a plumber. I don't care how the shit gets in there. It's just got to go, right?
Well, the thing is, with our server guys, and I'll admit it, I'm a card-carrying member of the server guy club, have to be able to move these servers around. And by using a server profile, I can manage the worldwide names, MAC addresses, system serial numbers, as well as all those connections to that device. And now my application's no longer welded to a piece of hardware. And, that gives me a lot of operational flexibility. Whether you want to call it cloud or not, just having that ability to, oh, a server failed, I can just move that workload to another piece of hardware. Or, I want to take it from a dual-core system to a quad-core system, I can move a profile around. Or I can pull a server out of a blade enclosure and slide another one in there to replace it when it's broken. Those sorts of functionality is one of the critical things for Virtual Connect.
Yeah, that's all server guy stuff. Who cares about that? We're a networking podcast. The day this becomes server pushes, I'll care.
But at the end of the day, all of our jobs is to make the business run. And
sure,
you know,
but that's not the focus of this show.
The network's important.
Right. We don't care about it on this show.
You even start singing Kumbaya. Yeah, it's just...
That's fine. One day I'll stand, as Ethan says, we'll stand around and sing Kumbaya with the server guys. All right.
We'll have to have another show called Packet Generator.
Yeah, that's right. If I had a show on servers, it'd be called Packet Generators. Okay, is there anything else, any other questions you want to ask, Ethan?
No, I'm good. This has been a really good show, Ken. I appreciate your time coming on.
I just want to say I hope you have a little better understanding of Virtual Connect, as do your listeners, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Well, that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again, well, in a little while. Ethan and I are getting into end-of-year crunches, and we're running out of bandwidth, so we're going to be delaying the shows running into the Christmas break, probably moving into a two-weekly cycle while we have to focus on the real world. Scary. But make sure you watch for what's going on, and make sure you come back. I'd like to thank Ken Hanolt for coming on the show this week. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. And what are you going to be doing this week? Are you going to be doing anything exciting?
Got a conference I've got to go to next week for the sales group. So that'll keep me busy in Las Vegas. That should be boring.
Can you blog or do Twitter, anything like that?
Yes. On Twitter, I am Blade Guy on Twitter. And also on HP.com, if you go HP.com/go/BladeBlog, I'm one of the contributors to that site as well.
And Ethan, what are you going to be doing this week?
Oh, man, I'm going to be lighting up all kinds of new hardware. It looks like we got the biggest push I got going right now is wireless. So we got some Cisco clean air access points that we're going to be deploying over a good bit of office space. And so wireless access controllers as well. So that'll be a fun little project, and that's what I'll be spending most of my time doing when I'm not so busy blogging at packetattack.wordpress.com or tweeting my life away at EC Banks. It's gotten so bad at work, they like make fun of me. Someone at work will say something to me and go, "You're going to tweet that, huh?" So, anyway.
I did that today. Someone got a bit poopy. So if you're going to bang away at wireless, we'll have to get you on the Packet Pushers Unplugged show with Jennifer.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks, I'd love to do that and talk about our experience deploying that. So we're kind of all looking forward to it here because what we got isn't so good.
I'm actually doing some trapeze stuff at the moment, so it could be an interesting discussion between and bring on some of the wireless people. Okay. Well, I look forward to catching up with you again in a couple of weeks. And I'm Greg Farrow, and you can find me at etherealmind.com or on Twitter as @etherealmind. Again, love to hear your feedback about the show, so send an email to Packet Pushers and let us know what you're thinking. And remember, too much networking would never be enough.